Let's talk to Stephen Esposito, president, managing partner at Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Stephen, what's up with markets? Why are we dropping so much today?
Thank you. Well, you've got a lot of fear dominating the market here. We have a 2.2% print on the GDP for the second quarter, better than expected, and unemployment moved up a little bit last time we heard at 3.8. So you've got a pretty strong economy and no recession in sight. So that's why we're down. The market is actually afraid, has no confidence, I believe, in the Federal Reserve. They believe that as good as it is, despite the rapid rise in interest rates historic, we're still showing strength in the economy. They're worried they're going to break something. They're going to keep going till they break it, and that's what the market's afraid of. I do think the bots are taking over a lot of this. Short sellers are participating because the outlook for earnings is not bad. Yet you have this massive sell-off in both the stock and bond markets. And sadly, even in the more conservative investments are actually getting hurt the worst, like utilities, preferreds, real estate investment trusts, the assets of the conservative bonds. And I think that's also playing, wreaking havoc with people's minds right now. So generally speaking, good economy, consider bad news, which is a little bit ridiculous.
What does it mean they're worried they're going to break something?
Well, that the Fed will keep pushing. They're not getting the results. The markets don't believe the Fed's not getting the results it wanted with the rate hikes. And therefore, they'll keep pushing and pushing till something breaks. And I would argue something has broken. If you look at, again, the bond market, the investors that are mm-hmm. sitting in utilities, things along those lines.
What's the trend on inflation right now? Where are we going on that?
That's a good question. Every time we get a different number, I think it's going to come down. If you're looking, the leading economic indicators have been down 17 months in a row. The numbers, if you look at many commodity prices, are falling across the board. While oil is around 90, it's still down from 2 years ago at the when the invasion of Ukraine occurred. So that is playing a role in the market. But generally speaking, we're hearing Costco said they're seeing inflation start to subside. So I think it's coming down. I just think there's lack of confidence in those who are in charge. And the markets move on confidence.
And what about T-bills then?
T-bills at this point, it's interesting. For the first time in years, I'm looking to actually purchase some of these income-bearing vehicles, dividends. I've been buying stocks with dividends all along. But now I'm looking at some of the actual bonds and utilities, preferreds, REITs, because they've been hit so hard on the losses they have taken, that they're coming into an area that looks good to me, not only just in the dividend yield or the income, but potential appreciation if we get some more normalization in the marketplace with less panic.
Well,
I'm actually looking at that.
Yeah, because what are you going to get, 5%?
Well, you'd be surprised on some of the dividends that are out there are in that area and stocks that have gone down 40, 50% with single-digit multiples with some dividends and five and above in many areas. So our team here, we're going through it painstakingly trying to narrow down. But I can tell you, there's so many things we're looking at right now, it's overwhelming to try to cherry pick the ones we like the best and the valuations they are. So it's a very interesting scenario, kind of like a kid in a candy store right now.
Well, you're picking through what? What are you looking at?
I'm looking at just about everything in there, especially in the value side. I think the financials have been way too hard, not justifiable, again, unless the Fed breaks something. I think you look at just about the consumer is still strong. The JOLTS number proves that. The healthcare field, these stocks are typically good places to hide in bad markets, but they've been hit too. Just across the board, I'm finding so many things in so many areas, even in the tech space. Some of the tech stocks have come down dramatically that I think are now becoming cheap as I would consider them cheap. So I'm in a very, you can tell, I'm actually looking at a screen and there's too many names I want. So I've got to narrow it down and deploy the capital between now and the end of the year is my goal.
You think we're going to get a bounce back here? I mean, if this is just sort of programmed institutional selling, I wonder if the market's going to correct a little bit here in the next week or so.
If you look underneath the surface, as we've talked for months now, I think the broad market has not participated. And it's now getting sold off again. But I do think you will see the broad market do better than the indexes when some common sense returns to the market. But again, the unknowns are dominating the institutional investor and the average investor right now when they see, again, the most conservative investments in their portfolio are getting damaged the most that creates fear. And then if you look at some of the old high flyers that were the only stocks to own, they're starting to come down hard, some of the favorite names. So there's a lot of panic out there. And I think when you see the numbers on the economy and people personally see the economy when they go out and they travel, it's confusing. And investors don't like uncertainty and confusion, and it's scaring them, I think.
Stephen Esposito is the managing partner and president at Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. YellowstoneWM.com. Always interesting, Stephen. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Is Philip Weiss ready to go from Seyfarth at Work? Hey, Philip, it's John. You're on. How are you?
Great, John. Good to be on again.
You are the president of Seyfarth at Work, and you say there is a way to be a good political and business leader. You've got to balance two things. What are they?
Yeah, it's really kind of a trending topic among executives the last few weeks, especially as we've all been watching either clips or in their entirety the presidential debates. Execs are looking at these the arena of the presidential back and forth and saying, you know what, this is a lot like what we have to be thinking about as business leaders, because it's about balancing that pugnacious side, the willingness to get in ready to rumble, to promote and support a position, but at the same time, balance that with a certain kind of graciousness, dignity, politesse. In the presidential side of things, it's that kind of presidential demeanor. But executives are telling us they have to contend with projecting both sides of this kind of a two-tone appearance for their own employees.
Tell me more what pugnacious looks or sounds like.
Well, you know, it's a great question, because when it comes to the executive on the business side, it's not so much scoring points, which it often is on a presidential debate stage, but it's about seeming as though you will aggressively pursue the company's interests, that you're not going to waver when it comes to doing what needs to be done. And sometimes executives, business owners, John, they just go a bit too far, particularly if they're trying to compensate for a potential perception that they might be a bit of a softie. So, for example, we work with a big aerospace company, and there was a new COO at that company, John, generally a very amiable guy, but worried that he had to send a signal that he was tough as nails when he needed to be. His response, his strategy, was whenever a strategy disagreement was brought to his attention between two key managers, he would basically bark at them, look it, you guys are the managers, just solve it. Over about 6 or 7 months, he realized issues were no longer coming across his desk. Disagreements, spirited discussions that really could have benefited from his input. So the barking had a terror factor that was so over the top, it failed to accomplish his goal, which is being that pugnacious side as well as that polite side that a leader needs in spades.
If you think somebody needs the sort of firm hand, I wonder, too, where you use it. Do you use it in public or in a meeting with other people, or do you use it privately? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, that is a really great insight and question, kind of at the same time, John. When we look at when it's appropriate to be kind of more brazen or bold, or really not maybe in someone's face, but very direct and pointed, far better do that in a private one-on-one moment. And when it comes to performance and failing to meet performance standards, that's a situation where while we want to be helpful, we don't want to hide the ball and what people are doing wrong. So that brazen moment might include when you're stressing goals, when you're pulling the trigger on a decision, and as you say, John, when you're responding to performance fails. Those big-hearted moments, on the other hand, are when you look to staff for ideas, when you hear their concerns, and when you elicit what motivates them. So the one-on-one can be a little bit of both, and you want to really develop this ability to know when to pivot. And executives are telling us if they think about it in their organization, they can make that distinction clear for themselves.
You say this has something to do with empathy?
It does. And what's really fascinating about empathy is it's one of these traits that is so important, but you can't let it run away with you as a leader. For example, if someone comes forward and they've got a medical issue or they need an accommodation for health reasons, well, your first response should certainly be empathetic. That's that, you know, that big-hearted response. But you don't want to take that discussion to the point that you're in a long conversation about their health status or agreeing to requests that really are not going to be able to be offered to others. So you got to take that step back, be very clear that there's a process that needs to be followed. And some leaders realize they got to make the pivot in the moment from empathetic to clear about standards and policies. So it's a great example of not letting yourself run away with one of these traits or another.
You know, it seems to me like a lot of times good management principles are directed at managers to impose on the employees. And as a longtime employee, I thought, no, you are the guys that need the training. I wonder how many professionals have this disposition you're talking about or can be trained to be both pugnacious and polite.
Yeah, that is actually something that we think about all the time when we develop training. Because when someone goes from employee level, John, to supervisor level, they're still thinking in terms of all that they expected, wanted, maybe felt entitled to as an employee. And it's fascinating how we have to kind of pull them a bit and say, you are the company. You are the organization. So that's where you often have to help them discipline themselves so not to agree to too much, say too much, or ask too much. But if you can get in early with frontline supervisors, and you can give them that discipline and those key moments to be more bold, more clear, more directed, they will turn into great senior managers later on.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work. Advice like this at Seyfarth, that's S-E-Y-F-A-R-T-H, Seyfarth@work.com. Philip, another day. Thanks for your help.
Many thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Elizabeth Ayula joins us now, NerdWallet, personal finance expert. Elizabeth, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm having a good day. How are you?
How is it that you're having a good day?
Well, one of my goals today was to get out in nature and not be stuck in front of my computer, and I was able to do that. So I went to around the corner for a few minutes, so that was nice.
I think we should all on days like this get out. Right. Talk to me a little bit about 401k and investing in it. That's something you've been thinking about, right?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a topic that I enjoy talking about. A 401k is essentially a tax advantage retirement savings account, and employers tend to offer it. So there are two ways to invest in a 401k, or rather two options. Your employer might have default investments already in the account, so those kind of automate, or you can kind of choose the investments that you do on your own if you're into researching and choosing your own investments. If you're not sure what to invest in, however, you can speak to a financial advisor.
Seems like I work for a company and they say, okay, do you want to be conservative or aggressive? There's a few choices, but they don't make it very difficult. It's more your age and your risk assessment, right?
Right. So those are usually what you call the target date fund. So as you mentioned, they invest more aggressively when you're younger. And as you get older, the investments become safer. So I think that might be something, depending on your age, depends on which you'll go for. But yeah, I'm not a financial advisor, and this is not financial advice. But yeah, this is just basic, you know, rule of thumb.
And what are some other rule of thumbs? For instance, there's a maximum amount I can put in my 401k? Is there a maximum amount the employer can fund my 401k?
Very good question. So the maximum amount is $22,500 in 2023. If you're age 50 and older, then you can do a catch-up contribution of additional $7,500. But I will say that the overall limit that you can put in a 401k for 2023 is $66,000. And how that works is you can contribute $22,500, and then after that, you can put what you call after-tax dollars in your account. And that's essentially money that you've already paid taxes on. So as long as it doesn't exceed $66,000, that includes your $22,500 and after-tax dollars you want to put, and also any employer matches that your employer puts in there as well.
Well, that first $22,500, is that pre-tax dollars? Do you not pay tax on that money?
Well, that's another good question. So you have two types of 401ks. You have a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k. So traditional 401ks basically put pre-tax dollars into the account, and pre-tax dollars are dollars that you haven't paid taxes on yet. Whereas a Roth 401k are after-tax dollars that go in there, and that's money that you have paid taxes on. So whether you pay taxes or when you pay taxes depend on which kind of 401k you have. And some people are confused about which one to choose, and the rule of thumb is it really depends on what tax bracket you think you're going to be in when you retire. So if you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket when you retire, then it might be better to go with the Roth. Whereas if you think you'll be in a lower tax bracket, then you go with the traditional.
Because when the money comes out, if you're still in a higher tax bracket, you're going to pay a higher percentage of that money. Better to pay it up front, maybe when your earnings aren't so great.
Exactly. You got it.
What about the employer match then? How much can they put in there? How much should I expect from my employer?
That varies from employer to employer. So some people, or rather some employers, might say, I'll match you up to 6%. So that means they're going to match you dollar to dollar. Every dollar you contribute, they'll contribute a dollar. But there's usually a cap. But there isn't, I don't think, a baseline for how much employers do. It just depends on their individual plans and how much they want to match you. But the main thing is it can exceed $66,000 no matter how much they put and you put.
But that first, say, 22.5 or 30,000, if you're over the age of 50, you can put in another $36,000 in that IRA. But what advantage do you have then? Is there still some tax advantage after the $30,000 mark?
No, there's not. So what's going to happen then is when you withdraw it, hopefully in retirement, you're going to have to pay taxes on your gains. But since you've already paid taxes on those dollars, you're not paying income tax. You're just basically paying taxes on whatever gains that your investments have gotten.
I see. But then how does that distinguish it from other investments? That is, inside or outside an IRA, is it just, I like this investment vehicle and I'll keep putting money in that IRA?
Well, it's that your money gets to grow tax deferred. So it grows in there. You don't have to pay taxes until you withdraw it. So that would be the main benefit of the after-tax dollars.
I see. And then just talk a little bit more about what the employer contributes. You said it depends on the employer. It seems like sometimes it's, what is it? It's not 50 cents on the dollar up to a certain point. Or is it something like that?
I can't speak to that. But what I can say is that, again, every employer can decide how they want to design their 401k plan. So again, they can say they want to put 2%, 6%. The main thing the IRS cares about is that it doesn't exceed $66,000 when that comes to your contributions as well as your employer's contributions.
And what about if I'm self-employed? How does that work?
So self-employed people have the option of doing what you call a solo 401k, and it essentially mimics a 401k account. The main difference is it is for sole proprietors or people who are self-employed. The thing that people need to know about solo 401ks, though, is that you can't have any employees if you want to contribute to that. The exception is your spouse. So if you have a spouse that is employed in the business or works for the business, you can still have a solo 401k. The limits are very similar to a regular or traditional 401k. So that's $22,500 in 2023. But one of the good things about the solo 401k is that, you know, because you're self-employed, you're both the employer and the employee. So in addition to that $22,500, you can also contribute an additional 25% of your compensation as the employer. So again, you just can't exceed $66,000 in 2023.
Elizabeth Aiella is the NerdWallet personal finance expert. You can read more at nerdwallet.com about 401k planning. Elizabeth, very helpful. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Ford has laid off nearly 250 workers at its Chicago Heights stamping plant because of the ongoing United Auto Workers strike. The facility provides parts to the Ford assembly plant, where 6,000 workers joined the national strike last week. Ford has also furloughed about 85 workers in Ohio at an engine plant that supplies its facility on Torrance Avenue. Workers at a GM facility in Bolingbrook and a Stellantis operation in Naperville had previously joined the nationwide UAW strike. A new study, by the way, says the walkout has already cost the auto industry nearly $4 billion. Wells Fargo has plans to expand its retail footprint in the Chicago area. Cranes reports the retail expansion will happen over the next several years and include the opening of more than 20 new branches. Right now, Wells Fargo is the 12th largest in Chicago in the suburbs. The San Francisco-based bank says it'll have at least 30 local branches after the upcoming expansion. I'm Steve Gratanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And your name, sir?
My name is Mohammed Babadous.
Also known by some as the Pumpkin King of Illinois, but he doesn't care for that title.
Because these kings have been so brutal.
So he prefers pumpkin expert, and some may want to call him pumpkin savior, because he did save the Illinois pumpkin industry. How he did that, after I thank the Chevy Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Maybe fill it up with pumpkins, too, because this year's crop is a good one.
Much better. Much better than expected.
Now, that's for the canning pumpkins, which are grown around Peoria, and for jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. Depends on which part of the state you're in.
Some places they have so much pumpkin and they don't know how to market. Overall, I would say there is no shortage.
Okay, then, the story of how Mohammed Babadoust, the professor of plant sciences at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, saved the state's pumpkin industry. It was about 24 years ago. He had just arrived at the U of I, and he went over to the Morton area where pie pumpkins were mysteriously dying on the vine, just melting.
200 acres of pumpkin field, not even single fruit left. 100% losses, very sad.
What it was a pathogen called Phytophthora, which has a dark place in history. It's the same pathogen that caused the potato famine in Ireland, which starved a million people to death and millions more had to leave the country. But back to the pumpkin fields of Illinois, Mohammed Babadoust, the son of a farmer in Iran, went to university to study plant sciences, then bounced around earning advanced degrees and battling plant pathogens in hotspots around the world before landing in Champaign, Urbana. And after seeing the devastated pumpkin fields of Tazewell County?
Myself and my team worked day and night, and we came up with a solution, and industry not only did not disappear, but also grew more than 200%. Then everybody can have two slices of pumpkin pie rather than one. Yes.
Well, on behalf of people who would like more than one slice, thank you, Professor Mohammed Babadoust. By the way, it's National Pumpkin Month. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Alan Markovich is the general manager of PXG Golf, the West location. That's PXG Chicago West, the location in Oakbrook Terrace. Hey, Alan, this is John. You're on the air. How are you?
Hey, John, I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
I imagine you're going to be even better tomorrow. Is that right?
I would agree. Yes, sir.
Tomorrow is National Golf Lovers Day. If I didn't know there was such a thing. I think for people that like golf, every day is that.
That is correct. But, you know, they got to distinguish a day specifically for our golf lovers. So that would be tomorrow, and we are looking forward to it.
So what do you guys do? How does it work there?
So PXG, John, above all else, we're an experience. You know, we provide custom fit, custom built golf clubs. They look and feel like nothing else. We also have an amazing line of men's and women's apparel. The big thing about PXG, though, is we only sell direct, meaning golfers get a personalized experience every time. It really sets us apart. Our team, we believe in our brand. We're all avid golfers, and we love improving the game for golfers of all skill levels.
So I'm not buying Ping or Wilson or somebody like that?
No, sir. PXG, which is Parsons Extreme Golf, named after our founder, Bob Parsons, it is its own brand. So we custom build our own golf clubs. We custom fit you for them, and that's the only equipment we sell here.
How do you assess an individual? Do you look at their swing, their height, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, all of the above and a lot more. So we do fittings here at PXG. We have three full hitting bays, and the fitting process is an experience that every golfer needs to have, whether you're a scratch golfer, whether you're not very good. Regardless of your skill level, it really helps. So we have you come in, and through the technology of what's called TrackMan, it's a simulator that reads swing speed, ball speed, spin, and a ton of different metrics. We use that, and then we use our experienced and trained fitters to custom fit each golfer. We look at your swing. We have a ton of different options as far as club heads, shafts, grips. We have different lines of clubs, and it's a process. But through that, we will find the best setup for you and get you dialed in and hitting the ball better.
Are you coaching people or just accepting that that's the way they do it and we're just going to help them with the club as best we can?
More of the latter, John. We fit your swing. So like I mentioned, whether you're a scratch golfer, a tour pro, or you just got into the game, we're going to take the swing that you have and fit clubs to match that. Our fitters are extremely knowledgeable, so they're happy to answer any questions or things like that about your swing. But we fit the swing, so you don't have to worry about having a great swing, about taking lessons. Yeah. We will take your swing and match it with our setup.
Because I'll swing it and you're going to go, well, that's not right. And then I'm going to go, why don't you shut up and just sell me some clubs? And that's kind of what happens, right?
Maybe not with that exact verbiage, but yes, exactly. So we're not going to ask you to reinvent the wheel. We're going to, a lot of golfers are slicers. Yeah, we'll help offset that.
So then do I buy a whole set or am I buying just the clubs I want?
It's whatever you want. So most importantly, there's no pressure to buy. We want to put our best foot forward and show you what we got. Our clubs can be sold individually or as a whole set. We have what's called a full bag promo, which is the best deal in golf. That's for a full set, 14 clubs, a bag, a hat, a dozen balls. But we can also sell clubs individually. So we want to sell you however many or however few clubs you need to best optimize your game.
This might be the last set of clubs a person ever needs, huh? I mean, if they're tailor-made to me.
They absolutely could be. Our clubs are also the most customizable on the market. So even if there are some changes to your swing, we are able to make some changes to your clubs right here at the store. We can change the loft and the lie. And also, whenever you get fit, that fitter is your guy. So if you need different clubs or want to take a look at the clubs you purchased, we'll have you back in here and work with you on that.
Okay, these clubs aren't in retail stores. They're in your locations. You're in Oak Brook, and then you're also in Northbrook. Is that right?
That is correct. We're here in Oak Brook Terrace. We're right on the corner of Summit and Roosevelt. And then we have another store up in Northbrook. They do a great job up there. And they're on the corner of Techney and Shermer Road.
And do I make an appointment or do I just walk in?
So we recommend an appointment if you're getting fitted. However, we love having guests in the door. So you can come in anytime. Yeah. We have a huge store, a ton of apparel, a big retail area to look at. We have clubs on display. We have putting greens. You can try out putters. If you're looking for that official club fitting, we do recommend making an appointment. You can call the store or visit our website at pxg.com.
Pxg.com. That's intriguing. I'm kind of curious what it would look like for me. I was golfing with my son, and he said, these are such bad clubs. And I thought they were fine. But then, you swing one of my kids' clubs, and it goes better. Imagine if they were custom fit, right, Alan?
Correct, yeah. Technology has come a long way, so the actual clubs themselves will be better, but you add in that custom fitting to help you line up, and the difference will be unbelievable.
Alan Markovich, general manager of the PXG Chicago West location in Oak Brook Terrace, pxg.com. Have a great day. Have a great week, Alan. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, John. You too. Have a good one.